Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it's the return of the movie!
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the return of the return of the movie. I am Ben, and with me today is my co-host, Matt, and we're gonna be jumping into some fun stuff. But first of all, hello, Matt. How are things coming from the West Coast?
Yes, I'm coming to you live from Los Angeles, California. And I can see myself coming to you live from Los Angeles, California. No, it's nice to be doing this. I don't think I've actually been on this segment for a little while, so it's nice to be back.
I think you were in the final for season two. We're now in season three of the return of the movie. But you were in the final for season two, and then we pre-taped a bunch of stuff for season three, but you were not in the lineup for that. That's mostly been myself and Kenny, which, by the way, everything that's going to come out after we finish covering The Evil Dead will be pre-taped up to a point, and we're going to have some fun guests for that. Also, I guess while we're at it, season three, what comes in threes, Matthew?
Trilogies come in threes.
Exactly. Trilogies. So season three of the return of the movie is all going to be conversations specifically around original trilogies. And to start this off, and also in honor of Halloween and spooky month in general, we're going to be going directly into The Evil Dead.
I've been waiting for so long to talk about these movies on this channel. You have no idea. I've been talking about this since the inception of the channel.
You have like strongly petitioned, and we were always like, there should be a time for that. Yeah, maybe Halloween. And then we always ended up covering something else on Halloween, which I should say, to start out with, my experience with the Evil Dead as a franchise is limited. So this will actually be my first time kind of perusing these films and really experiencing everything. But I did have some preconceived notions about what it was going to be like. And boy, was the first film not that. Yeah. I was so not prepared for what I got. But I really have to ask, Matt, before we jump into my opinion, what is your experience with this franchise? What actually got you into this?
So, I've been a long time fan of horror movies, especially a lot of those 80s franchises. I just ate all of that up when I was younger, like Halloween, especially Saw, Nightmare on Elm Street, Friday the 13th, like all the big ones. This one I kind of got into after all the others, but like I knew the reputation that these films had. I knew there was a musical before I even saw the movies. Yes, there is a musical, and there's like a clip of the whole performance on YouTube, and I can put it in the comments if you guys want. Yeah, I saw the first one in high school and was scared out of my mind by it. And it took me like a year or so to like work up the nerve to see the sequel, and it was like way funnier than I expected. And then when I saw that, I'm like, okay, so this is where this franchise really becomes itself. And then I just kind of watched it from there. But yeah, I've seen every single movie. I've seen Ash vs. the Evil Dead. I've seen the musical. I won't say I'm like the biggest, like, I'm not like a walking encyclopedia on the franchise, but I have greatly enjoyed everything that I've seen from it.
Is there a name for the Evil Dead fandom? Like, do you guys go by anything specific?
I think there is a name. I don't know. Like I said, because I'm not like,
I can look it up. I'm just like, I know that the fandom specifically for Evil Dead is as cult fandom as you can get. My experience with this beforehand, again, I had never seen the movies until watching now to research for this podcast and another project that will be premiering later this month. But my initial reaction with this
screwheads. We're called screwheads.
You're called screwheads. I don't know the reference yet. I don't know the reference. I just know that y'all are some crazy motherfuckers as far as fandom is concerned. I had friends that were really into specifically Ash versus Evil Dead, which was hard sold to me, but I didn't watch it specifically because I was like, well, I haven't seen Evil Dead 1, 2, and 3 yet, so I'm going to be left out of the loop. But I'm starting to gather the fact that Evil Dead is specifically in the original trilogy, there's some weird continuity going on. So I don't know what's connected. I don't know how everything goes. I will say I went in expecting for this first film, great physical comedy, just like super gory, super crazy. And instead, I watched in horror as I experienced the rest of the film. This first film's fucking scary.
It's honestly one of the best horror films I've ever seen. I really think it ranks up there and holds up there. It's almost like a snuff film because of the way it's shot and because they were using 16 millimeter film. It's got that grainy quality and like the lighting isn't quite set and they had to use a lot of natural lighting. And that film was so low budget that they legitimately only had enough film to get like one or two takes of each scene. The cabin that they shot that thing in was like a dangerous structural building to be in. So like, sometimes when you're seeing actors get hit or like in physical danger from like the environment, they probably are in real life too.
Oh my God.
There's just like a rawness to the whole thing. It's like a creepy snuff film you found buried in the woods that it's almost like that first film is almost like you found the Book of the Dead and then opened up something you should never have opened up.
I will say, I don't know if I would, it is definitely, I can compare it to this, to the like idea of like finding a snuff film if it weren't for the fact that, like for me, when I say that, that is something that I exclusively save for like almost found footage type films.
Yeah, fair.
But also I will say I fortunately have never, I wasn't on the internet early enough for when those things were actually floating around and that was a real concern. So I, yeah. And this is return of the movie is not the place to be going over actual snuff films. But it has such a low fidelity vibe that I'm just like, this comes off to me almost as if it's like a really good student film. Like I can tell how little budget there is just from the lighting choices, the set choices, the way that they use the camera in most scenes. Like even some of these shots that are just like, ah, like how they pulled off the fucking car, like falling through the tire, like falling through the bridge real quick. I'm like, okay, that was probably actually really dangerous to take because of how they're doing that. But I salute them. And overall, like, even though it's like kind of shoddily made, psychologically, it really digs deep in there. I'm excited to see what it's going to be like with added physical comedy, but I never would have guessed that they would have gone that direction after this film.
So this film series comes from a couple of different places, just in terms of influence. And with the physical comedy stuff, again, that's like almost exclusively beginning in the second one. And they wanted to make a horror film. And to your point about this being a student film, Sam Raimi was like 20 when they started shooting this thing. This is a student film, basically. It's just probably the most successful student film ever made. They made a proof of concept short to kind of generate money for revenue purposes. They got it screened at a local theater. They got local press to cover it. But like the contacts that they were hoping to raise money with refused to give it money because they didn't think it would be successful. But those contacts did give them pointers on how to kind of like raise the money. So they basically just went door to door begging for money to get this thing financed. And then they did it right as Raimi turned 20.
So and it just straight up was a student film at that point then.
No, they were all still in college. Sam Raimi and Bruce Campbell were like lifelong friends, dating back to like, I think it was like elementary or middle school. And they always knew they wanted to be in movies, but they decided that because Bruce Campbell had more success with women, that he should be the actor and Raimi should be the director. So that's how those two careers got started.
Okay. Hold up. We've all been 20 in film school. First of all, the pure talent oozing out of Sam Raimi and Bruce Campbell on that, fantastic. Now that I'm aware of what A, how old they were, and B, where they were in their career on that. And two, comparing that to most student films I've seen made by people of the same age range, I'm just flabbergasted is what this is. That is like one of the straight up most impressive things that I've heard about this film. And I'm surprised no one has brought that up to me before.
Yeah.
Like even in a like film setting, the idea that something like this could be made by a group of 20-year-olds is phenomenal. And also, just very impressive. I'm very here for that. Now, before I completely, I have so many questions about this, but first I actually want to throw to a patron question. So our patron Twilight Goddess has asked, the original Evil Dead was always funny to me because Bruce Campbell is an absolute gem. This was one of the first horror films that tricked me, especially when the main character has a full-on melee session with the witch from the basement. However, the remake is so much... However, the remake was much more psychological and spine-chilling. From the scene where the woman was basically R-worded by the briar vines to the possession hand dismemberment to the secret in the basement, I was disgusted, intrigued, and overall disturbed. So, to bring this in, I do genuinely wonder... how much more psychological is the remake? And also, are there things that like you think that this film did not need to be remade for?
So I'm actually a huge fan of the remake, the 2013 remake, I assume you're talking about.
Indeed.
I almost wonder if the patron question is mixing up Evil Dead 2 because the basement witch, that doesn't happen until Evil Dead 2. But Evil Dead 2 is really what put this franchise on the map. But with the remake, it has one of the more clever premises for why these people are in the woods alone that I've ever seen. And if you don't mind my spoiling a little bit.
Yeah, go, for me, you can. I don't know. Patrons, I don't know.
Well, I'm just going to go over the premise. The basic premise is that it's still five people going to this cabin in the middle of the woods. But the main character, the Jane Levy character, Mia, she's like a recovering addict who's trying to go sober, cold turkey. And so they take her out into the woods so she can like go through withdrawal in kind of like a safe, isolated space. They find this, but like the same basic premise plays out. Someone finds the book, they read from it, and then all hell breaks loose. But Mia's the first one to get possessed in the remake. But because she's already kind of half out of her mind because of the withdrawal, when she starts acting really strange initially because of the possessions, nobody believes her because they all think it's because of drug withdrawal. And so I thought that was one of the more clever uses of that. And so the entire thing, the remake has a lot more metaphorical stuff going on with addiction. That it just added kind of a new dimension. The remake is just kind of a well-executed gore fest outside of that. And my God, like, even though not all the characters are like the most likable or smart people in the world, you really feel for them when they start to get it. It's not that the remake was necessary, but I think for the product we got, it was a pleasant surprise.
I will say, for this first film, I did not really love a lot of the main characters. Like, really, Ash was the only one that I'm just like, oh, he's just a sweet boy. And then everyone else, I'm like, you're... Like, the other man that they were with, and I know that these people never come back because they're very dead, and I've seen the beginning of Evil Dead 2, and there's some weird shit going on that we'll talk about.
An explanation for that, but yeah.
I'm so excited to get there. I know that all my expectations are out the window, but like for me, one of the biggest parts of at least what made that film, the original, so interesting was that I didn't really love most of the characters. I think a lot of the women were written incredibly two-dimensionally, and this is something that I actually think that Sam Raimi has a general problem with, especially like once we start getting into the Spider-Man series, which is a conversation.
Oh my God, the way Mary Jane is written in those movies is the most frustrating thing in the world, but that's again, yeah, different conversation.
I think that unfortunately ends up taking place with all three of our lady characters within this film. And at that point, I was like, okay, we got kind of a good spread, but everyone's being treated as either an object of like one of the men that's there, either a sister or girlfriend, which then the movie is not made really better. It's mostly just shocking from the moment that we get the vine scene that was also alluded in this. Was the vine scene remade?
There is another version of the vine scene in the remake.
Yeah.
So that scene does exist in the remake. It just plays out in a kind of a different way. The funny thing is you actually see the way that the remake plays out. You actually see more in the original of what's going on. And there's a lot more implied horror. It's actually one of the more restrained scenes in that movie, as far as horror goes, believe it or not.
Well, I think that's a very, if you are going to use sexual assault in horror, I think that it shouldn't be shown in a titillating way, which was my biggest problem with how the vine scene in 1985's Evil Dead like was displayed, because it's very well lit. You kind of see all the action going on, and it's mostly just a what the fuck, why is that necessary kind of moment.
That's kind of this entire movie in a nutshell, though.
However, there is a difference between shock value for shock value and then shock value for that is part of the plot. Like, I don't think that vine was necessary for the possession, unless I'm missing something major in how the Evil Dead possession works. Are they called Deadites? That's what I've been seeing online.
They're called Deadites. They don't start calling them that until the second one. The second one is really when we get into a lot more of the lore of what's going on. Yes, this first one lore. Is just the first one is more just this unexplainable evil that is attacking these people.
Which I think has its place, because, again, one of the things that I really liked about this film was that the premise was extremely simple to the point where it still had a lot of shock value to it. It still got under my skin. The idea that even when you're possessed, you could suddenly not look like a dead monster anymore and then come back to being like, no, it's me, I swear, and then swap back in an instant. Which was
that's one of the more terrifying ideas that they use,
especially the because these possessions, the deadite possessions, they seem to like actively rot your body. They cause physical change. It feels like once you're possessed, that's it. You're essentially just walking dead, and there's no way of saving you. Even at the end, when he burns the Necronomicon, it's not like the people that were possessed magically got their lives back. They were just dead, just melted away.
I almost wonder what would have happened had they figured out that burning the book is the answer. I almost wonder what would have happened if they had burned the book while a few of them were still running around just to see. But, like, because of the nature of this movie, they probably would have died, so.
Yeah. I feel like that, and ultimately, again, when you're making a film, you have full say as a storyteller. And I think one of the things that does tip me the other direction, though, is that he burns the book, but then the final shot is him still getting got by some sort of possession, ghost, or demon that is still wandering the woods.
That shot we see all throughout the movie, and it's really, really clever. They're just basically running around the woods with a camera the whole time. But it's like one of the most iconic final shots in horror.
I feel like one of the things that I really like about it from a just camera perspective, though, is it doesn't have the motion of like someone jogging with a camera. It has like this sort of like Swift, almost crane style. But now that I know how it was made, they did not have a crane that could do that kind of movement. So there's either some really genius camera work going on or some amazing editing for the time.
I think it's a little bit of both, and like they just took what they had and sped it up. I don't think they were even using Steadicam, because Steadicam was a relatively new and very expensive thing at the time. But I would need to double check on how they got that shot specifically.
If anyone knows the details, feel free to leave it in the comments. So one of the things that we're going to end off on for today, at least. So I have, and this might take a while for us to get through, on this channel, obviously, we make some Cthulhu Mythos related content. We have done reactions where we will break down all the Cthulhu Mythos things in a piece of Cthulhu Mythos media. And this one I was hesitant to do because I didn't know if there was enough for me to break down. And obviously in the first film, at least, there wasn't. So I have some questions about what I know to be the Necronomicon, because of how the fandom talks about it so much, to the point where a lot of people think that it's from Evil Dead when it's from H.P. Lovecraft. Excuse me. But on top of that, in this film, it's not introduced as the Necronomicon. It's introduced as Nosferatu Ex Mortis, which is Latin for the book. It's just a straight up Latin. You throw it in Google Translate and it is the Book of the Dead. Also, I did not prepare the Latin pronunciation for that, obviously, so please leave me be.
So the name of the book actually changes from movie to movie. Sometimes it's that. Sometimes it's Necronomicon Ex Mortis. Sometimes it's I'm going to screw this pronunciation up really badly. It's Naturam Demonto, which I think would mean like demon book or something like that. It has a different name every time.
Is that like one supposed to be Latin?
I guess I have. I honestly haven't the slightest idea. It's like one of those things where it's like it's like going into anything even sci-fi-ish and just saying quantum physics as if that explains going faster than the speed of light.
Yes,
not what quantum physics is, but that's like if you say something like heady or mysterious sounding enough, you can kind of hand wave a lot of shit off the table.
Interesting. So there's a couple reasons why I think this may have popped up. So these films, the first one was 1985. The second one...
The first one was 1981.
Oh, excuse me. It is listed as 1985 on release. So
it was re-released a number of times in theaters, which is how it got the box office build up to justify doing a second one.
Okay, cool. So so when I was looking it up, the official one was listed as 1985. So I guess first aired is actually 1981. Cool. All right. So a couple things on this. At this time, there is a sudden, I guess it would be called the Lovecraft Renaissance. There's a ton of movies in the 80s that are essentially just adaptations, some of which are very poor, of many of Lovecraft's work. So there's The Shadow over Innsmouth, which is remade as Dagon, and there is Herbert West Reanimator, which is remade as Reanimator. So at this point, his works are becoming part of the public domain. So one of my initial thoughts is, did they just change it to Cthulhu Mytho? Did they just include the Necronomicon because they suddenly could in, I believe it's the second film that they go into that? Or are there like more subtle connections that they kind of sneak in? Because one of the things that is noted is there's kind of this shot of a Cthulhu looking person as they're opening up the book in the first and second film, and scrolling through the pages.
So Sam Raimi was a huge fan of Lovecraft, and so I think it's more homage than anything else, because they had had the basic premise for this for a few years, like I said, with that short film that they shot, but they wanted to include a little bit of that into it as well. I'm not a deep enough into the Lovecraft canon to know, like, you'd probably, as we go throughout these movies, you'll probably spot more stuff that's hidden in there, because there's stuff to do with cosmic entities that are just too powerful to comprehend, and time travel and things like that. So you'll probably spot more stuff as we go through, but like, this was definitely a nod to Lovecraft, if nothing else.
Interesting. Okay, so to follow that up with, I just have two thoughts that will actually kind of solidify exactly how homage to, because the interesting thing is with when you're working on the Cthulhu mythos is that any author can kind of do whatever they want with it. If you want to decide that your story is going to be a buddy comedy featuring Cthulhu and Haster, you can totally fucking do that. There's absolutely nothing that is preventing you from doing it. And if you want to like change key details, it's also super possible. So one of the things that, because I haven't seen the rest of the films, but this will solidify for me whether or not this is Cthulhu mythos, has to do with its origin. So I guess now I'm going to ask you to spoil some things for me to the best of your ability, if you can remember. First of which, is there a point where they go over the creation of it, or supposed creation, or a perhaps creation or distribution myth, that involves a Arabian man that goes by the name Abdul Al-Hazred?
Oh God. I don't know if I remember that name popping up or that archetype popping up. What I can tell you is that, and so in the third one, Ash gets sent back into time, into like this medieval setting. And the medieval setting is, I don't know, because it's an 80s fantasy movie, it's super anachronistic with, like, where it actually would take place. Ostensibly, it's 14th century Kandar, which, obviously, fictional country, but, like, it's, like, this deserty, swampy, foresty. It's almost like an Arthurian landscape, okay, with a little bit of desert to it. So, it, like, you could argue that it's, like, somewhere Middle East plus medieval England. Would be my guess.
Okay, so my only problem with that is they had a shot on the map in the second film showing where that is, and it was distinctly in North Africa.
It might have been that, but it's just like, again, these films are not about the historical accuracy.
Yeah.
But there's a vaguely, like, almost Middle Eastern or North African vibe to the first one, but okay. Like there's scenes where he's traveling through forests and swamps and things like that. So,
okay, which definitely would not happen in the Sahara Desert, which is obviously the location of what would be going on if you were in North Africa. So,
I think they wanted the aesthetics, if not necessarily the accuracy.
Everything I know about Sam Raimi, this does not surprise me. This sounds like a choice that would be made, and it's going for the campiness, which is obviously there in the second and third. And honestly, I'm just excited to get to see that. So I think if that is the case, I'm looking through if I have any additional questions, because we talked about Kandar. And I believe Kandar is totally made up, but I could be wrong. Because I also went on a quick Google to see if, Kandar is real, excuse me.
It depends how you spell it, too. There's, like, three different spellings that they use in the canon. Sometimes
maybe Kandar is not real.
Sometimes it's an apostrophe. Yeah, I've always had the impression that this is, like, a totally made-up place.
I did find it spelled with a K, but it is, deep in India, which is not the location. So yeah, okay, 100% fictional. We got that sorted out for me. So yeah, from what my understanding of this was, And I went back and double checked through there's unfortunately there's no real good place to figure out all the Cthulhu mythos stuff unless you are just going on the Lovecraft wiki or Cthulhu mythos wiki. Obviously everything is contested because all their own authors come up with. But H.P. Lovecraft never said a location where that came from, which is one of the things that I want to check on. We just knew that he was Arabian. However, I do not know if H.P. Lovecraft was lumping in Indian people with general Arabia or Africa.
Knowing what we know about Lovecraft, it's possible that that was just a bit of Orientalism that he threw in there.
Oh, 100%. Again, horrifically racist man would be really, really upset if he knew how his work was being used in the modern era. Honestly, it's a good thing that he passed away as early as he did, because a lot of this stuff would not be in the public domain if it weren't for that. Which everyone now, we're kind of living in this era where since the 80s, people have been reinventing the characters. And we're just now getting a lot more Lovecraftian media that's like popping up in the mainstream as well, which is an exciting Lovecraft thing to see.
The other thing with Lovecraft is that like there's a lot of properties that even if they don't use like his specific characters or situations, are very heavily inspired by his aesthetics or like his themes. So like, I don't know, The Thing. Which yeah. came out like, which admittedly that too is a remake, but the version of The Thing that everybody thinks about only came out like a year after Evil Dead. You have Alien, which is like the ultimate cosmic horror, which is the genre that Lovecraft invented practically, and so those two would become, or especially Alien would become a huge franchise after that. And that's speaking of franchises that reinvented themselves. But there is definitely, or like you look at something like, I don't know, True Detective, where, you know, they have references to Carcosa and The King in Yellow and things like that. But it's super, super mysterious and just kind of leaves it at that.
Which I don't think is a bad thing.
That's kind of the point, isn't it?
Yeah, I would say that the most important thing, and like this is something that if you're a horror writer and you are planning on working in cosmic horror, you have to, any horror in general, is the idea of explaining nothing, which this movie in particular does very well. And there is the added benefit, there's the added piece of if you explain something, make sure that whatever happens, you are left with more new questions than you are answers. This is one of the reasons why actually one of the trickiest genres to write is actually horror mystery. Because as you demystify your magic system, the more the genre shifts from horror to fantasy. And the more that the reader or viewer knows about how the horrific thing actually works, the less scared they're going to be of it.
Alien isn't perfect. Again, going back to that, it's a perfect example of that, where in the first movie, it's just this pure evil killing machine. It doesn't have eyes. It has two mouths. It changes every time you see it. Sometimes it looks like a little baby. Sometimes it's that like crab, that face hugger thing that looks like a crab. And then you have the full xenomorph. But I think the smartest thing that that franchise did was when James Cameron decided to make the second one an action movie, because he's like, well, okay, we already know what these things look like. So we almost have to do a full genre shift just to keep the intensity and the suspense up. And that's what they did.
And the other thing is just knowing when to actually make that shift, because I think Evil Dead actually does this, because it's my understanding that we get a lot more lore understanding in the second one. And that's also when it shifts into horror comedy. And then,
I'm not going to talk about Evil Dead 2, because if I'm not mistaken, that's the next one. That's the next episode, right? To make a long story short, Sam Raimi has always been inspired by the Three Stooges. And they didn't initially want to make Evil Dead 2. They wanted to just go straight to Army of Darkness, where he's like, it's like this medieval 80s fantasy movie.
They wanted to go straight there?
Yeah, they just wanted to have Ash just get straight sent back to time. But the person who gave them, the only person who was willing to give them funding to do Evil Dead 2 wanted a bigger budget, basically redo of the first one. Because, like, by the time, I think it was 1987, by the time Evil Dead 2 rolled around, Halloween was on its fourth movie. Nightmare on Elm Street was about to hit its, I think, third. Friday the 13th was on, I think, either five or six by that point. And so, there was definitely, like, it's almost like superheroes.
Yeah.
Where it's like there's an established formula, and so you don't want to deviate too much from that in order to keep making money. And so in order to avoid just doing the same thing over again, Raimi wanted to infuse some more of the Three Stooges bit there. And that's really where Bruce Campbell as Ash shines, because here he's just like you said, he's just a sweet boy. He's like a completely different character going forward from this.
Yeah, one of the things that I knew going into Evil Dead is, like, this is the man that's supposed to destroy all evil. It is Ash versus evil. And I'm like, this is not the vibe I'm getting from this poor, poor, muscular man who's...
He's the final girl in this movie.
Yeah, he's full on the final girl. And even then, at least in this universe or whatever the hell happens, he dies. So it's... so much more, like, wonderfully grim, and I'm glad that they at least knew that if they were going to continue, they needed to have that genre shift, and I'm just glad that they pulled it off. Otherwise, I would not have seen this film. I was going in expecting a fun time. That is not necessarily what I got.
And can I say, speaking of... not showing your hand with magic systems and things like that. I think the smartest thing this film does is you never actually see what these things look like ever. Because anytime you encounter one, it's in the form of a possessed rotting corpse.
And it's, I didn't realize that they were things. I thought they were just, you know what? No, because she was reacting as the camera was cut. Yeah, you're totally right.
No, yeah, there is something some tangible chasing monster. Them, and they know it's there. Even if it's just like a burst of wind or something, there is a physical interaction with the world that these things do have. I honestly think that one of the weakness, like Army of Darkness is seen as like the weakest of the three. And I think one of the reasons is that because it commits to the fantasy, you have a lot of like fantasy-esque villains, and you get to see what some of these demons actually look like, and it's kind of underwhelming. But like with this first one, it's like you don't, it's like the Jaws thing. You never see the monster ever. You only see kind of like the aftermath of what it does to people.
God, the idea that the deadites that we see are just aftermath is fucking horrifying, to put it lightly. We'll see next episode if I'm still spooked or if I am just in for a ride then. All right. So I think on that one, thank you all for being around for, by the way, we're live streaming these now for patrons and occasionally, like today, the general public. But that was mostly because we had a bunch of technical issues and we needed to get this.
No,
thing
we
out.
Felt nice. We felt like being nice to the general public.
Oh, yeah, you're right. We wanted some non-exclusivity. This will be up in video form for our patrons early, and this will be out a week later for the general public, and you can kind of generally count on that being the way that the return of the movie goes forward. So if you want to check that out, you can click that link that's down below. Otherwise, if you just want to help support us, like, let us know how you feel in the comments, and hey, it's the return of the movie.